All right, Dr. Berry, welcome. We're running a little bit late, but welcome also to the listeners of KPTZ and Willie Bentz as well. And we'll pass it off to you for our weekly update. The game still seems to be in play.
Yes, thank you so much for having me. So looking at COVID-19 cases around the country, we are starting to see the beginning of a winter surge. So cases are rising throughout the country in all four major regions. Cases are up about 50% compared to where they were a month ago. And we are unfortunately seeing hospitalizations and deaths start to rise as well. Currently about 100,000 new cases of COVID-19 are diagnosed in the United States every day, and approximately 1,200 citizens die every day as well from COVID-19. Interestingly, Washington State is currently bucking that trend. So it is one of the only states in the country that is not seeing cases rise, at least not yet. Currently, our cases are continuing to fall in Washington State. We think a lot of that might well be due to just the sheer number of our population who are fully vaccinated. So we are not seeing the level of Thanksgiving spike that many other parts of the country are seeing. It's still early days and we certainly could see that start, but we're not seeing it yet in Washington State. In Jefferson County, our current total number of COVID-19 cases is 1,324. Our current case rate is up a touch, up to 214 per 100,000 with a 5% positivity. We have two of our residents currently hospitalized, and we have had 20 deaths so far in this response. In Clallam County, case numbers are up to 5,359 with a case rate of 213 per 100,000, so approximately the same as what we are seeing in Jefferson, with a percent positivity of 6%, 5 people currently hospitalized, and a total of 74 deaths. We are starting to see cases come in from Thanksgiving gatherings. We aren't seeing very large-scale outbreaks from that, but we are seeing multiple small kind of clusters of cases related to Thanksgiving, mostly related to small children. So the unvaccinated kids who kind of gathered together in holiday celebrations. This is leading to some increased contact tracing need in our schools as these kids come back to school, but the schools are working really hard on that. I know I was working with a lot of schools over the weekend to make sure that we could get ahead of that. Of course, I think one of the biggest pieces of news since the last time that we were all together is the rise of the Omicron variant. This has now been detected in Washington State, and that was really anticipated. We have not yet detected it in Clallam or Jefferson counties, but it is really a matter of time. We've seen it in King County so far, and really we tend to follow King County by about 2 weeks. So it's really a period of time before we start to see that here. We are still learning a lot about the Omicron variant. Early data indicates that it is more transmissible than the Delta variant, but we don't know yet the degree of its severity, whether it is the same severity as prior variants, more severe, or even potentially less severe. We don't know enough yet to know the severity of this variant, which is a really key thing as we make our public health recommendations going forward. We are seeing early indications of increased reinfections. So for those whose only immunity comes for COVID-19 comes from prior infections, we are seeing more reinfections with the Omicron variant, which is something really important for our community to know. We are not yet seeing significant evidence of decreased efficacy of the vaccines against the Omicron variant. We're of course continuing to study that, and we will get a lot more information in the next 2 weeks, but we are not yet seeing that play out in real time. What we are seeing is the Omicron variant is really taking hold in under-vaccinated community. It's no surprise that we're seeing a rise of it in the Global South, where people have not had enough chance to get vaccinated yet. But that does pose some risk for under-vaccinated communities in the United States as well. I think in Jefferson County, we can take some comfort in the fact that we are actually a very well-vaccinated community. Of course, that is patchy. So there are parts of our community that we are interested in shoring up. But really, as a community as a whole, we are very well vaccinated, and we are, I think we are in a good position as we go into the Omicron variant. But I do really want to encourage our citizens who have not yet gotten vaccinated. We are seeing more reinfections with this new variant. So now is a really good time to go ahead and get vaccinated. And if you have already been vaccinated, now is a really good time to go ahead and get your booster. I know before we were talking about, you know, when is really the time to start to get a booster if you're not in one of those high risk groups. Now is really that time where I would encourage folks to go ahead and move forward with getting a booster. We don't know yet if there will be a decreased efficacy of two doses of the vaccines, but it's a really good time to just shore up those defenses as we move into the holiday surge and as we prep for however much of the Omicron variant we will see in our community. We talk a lot about vaccine equity, and I think that's important. It's important to acknowledge that these variants do develop and will continue to develop in parts of the world that are under vaccinated. The challenge is that the situation in those countries is a lot more complex than just giving them vaccines. We've learned a lot more about what went wrong in South Africa. Part of it was that we didn't give them vaccines for 6 months. So we vaccinated Europe and the United States before we shared that wealth with the Global South. But then when we did, we just threw a bunch of vaccine at them without any infrastructure planning for how to distribute that vaccine. And for those of us who have worked really hard on distributing vaccine here, we know that that is complex and takes a lot of planning. And unfortunately, we also gave a lot of South Africa Pfizer, which takes really high levels of refrigeration, which much of the country doesn't have. So it's a problem that we need to solve on a global scale, on a federal action scale. But as community members in Jefferson County, it's not as simple as just foregoing a booster so that it'll go to another country. It won't. And in fact, just sending it to another country wouldn't fix the problem. It's a much more complex problem to fix. So if you have access to a booster here, I would encourage you to take it. It's a good idea. It's very safe. And it'll shore up your body's defenses as we move into the winter season. So with that, I'm happy to take any questions.
Thank you, Kate. Heidi, any questions? Go ahead, Kate.
I would just say I read all the written questions, and most of anything I had was in there. So I'm going to defer to the written questions today.
Kate?
Yeah, Dr. Berry, I'm curious. It's really interesting being in Portugal, where free and easy testing is a much bigger part of the response here than it is in our country. There's a new mandate that to go to bars and nightclubs, you have to get tested. And so there's literally a line around the plaza all weekend long of 20 somethings who, you know, excited to get tested. It was just part of their, you know, pre-funking for the night was to get their test. And I thought, wow, what a difference that we don't have that mandate nor that availability. Just curious, like, are there pros and cons to that? Like, how would you explain that difference?
Sure. So I think one of the key things when it comes to COVID-19 prevention is what we think of as these layered defenses. I think, unfortunately, in the United States, we often present these things as if you have to pick one. So either you get vaccinated, or you're protesting, or you're pro-masking. But really, it's all of them. We want to layer all of our defenses, and we want to utilize every avenue we can to reduce our risk of transmitting COVID-19 to others, and of course of contracting it ourselves. So we recommend getting vaccinated. We also recommend getting tested if you are sick or if you're about to enter a really high-risk venue. We certainly, of course, recommend masking in high-risk spaces as well. You can do more than one thing, and we encourage you to do so. The challenge, I think, in the United States is that there has not been the kind of federal scale up of testing resources that we've seen in other parts of the world. And so we often have just not had the tests available even now. Certainly that was one of the biggest failings of the early COVID response, was not having adequate access to COVID-19 testing. And we of course have come an incredibly long way now, but it's not up to the level that we could do that, that we could test everyone who wants to go out to a bar on a Friday night. We continue to run in testing shortages. At Jefferson County Public Health, actually for a while, we just didn't have tests. Because they were out, and we couldn't get any of them. So we couldn't test close contacts of those who have COVID-19. We have them back. They were on back order and they finally arrived. So we can now share those tests with our local residents. But it has been a challenge. And I think if we added increased access to testing on top of our vaccination programs, we would be in a much better space. One of the places where I get questions is, from folks who are fully vaccinated, but want to make sure they're doing things right and they're being safe and they're not giving anybody COVID-19, and really plan for how do you use those tests. Well, unfortunately, they are in short supply. So the most important way to use a test is, even if you're fully vaccinated, if you get sick, you should get tested right away. And you can get tested through the drive-through at Jefferson Healthcare, or you can get tested by purchasing one of the rapid antigen tests that you can get over the counter. I think one of the challenges we have also seen in the COVID-19 response is the fracturing and the complexity of the American healthcare system. And the fact that so much of this is really based on having the means to purchase these things. So COVID-19 tests are relatively inexpensive. Over-the-counter antigen tests are $25 for a pack of two, but that doesn't mean they're universally available. That is a price point that makes them out of reach for some folks. And I think that's a place where I've heard that our federal government is hoping to do some more work. And I hope to see more work in that direction. I think it would be incredibly helpful.
Go ahead, please. I'm sorry.
Well, it's interesting because while we have been able to get some test kits free of charge, and public health has also been buying them at a not so different cost than it is to the average citizen too, and making those available. It's shocking to see an entire country lining up for tests so that they can socialize. And that, I think it's related to a really high vaccination rate here as well. But just to see the kind of federal commitment and what that translates to on the ground is like, oh, right, this is what they've been saying. Like, this is what Dr. Berry is saying. We don't have the same federal response. And
yeah. Indeed. I'm not sure that everybody knows that those COVID-19 tests that public health distributes, we purchase those for not much less than you can buy them over the counter in order to give them away. So it is it's a significant cost to our local county government to do that. And we appreciate the support of our local county government to help us move in that direction. But it is certainly challenging.
Now I'll follow up on that line of questioning. And I guess so it seems like, more like this European model is a best practice. And I'm wondering if the feds actually do put some financial support behind it, so removing that equity gap from accessibility to tests, is there a supply of tests that are available if we can start to really use them as a tool the way it seems like the best practice indicates? If we can get around the cost, is there enough to keep us in testing for that protective layer?
Not right now, unfortunately. So in addition to stepping in to cover costs, the federal government would really have to step in to increase production and improve distribution, just like we did with vaccination. So it's not enough to just make the tests. You have to get them everywhere, and you have to figure out who's going to do the testing. Are you going to hire a bunch of folks to actually stand by and hand out those tests and help people interpret them? But it is, I think it is a place where we can do a lot better as a community. And I am excited to see that the federal government is taking an interest in scaling that up. In the meantime, I think it's important for folks to know how to use tests. So rapid antigen tests are great for if you're symptomatic. They're also really great for keeping you safe if you have if you're having an indoor unmasked gathering, and especially if anyone who's coming to the gathering is unvaccinated. So particularly if you're going to have some kids coming in who haven't had a chance to get vaccinated, getting them swabbed before that gathering will make that a much safer gathering. Kids, as we know, can be varying levels of gunky, and it can be hard to decide if they're really sick or not. And so doing a COVID-19 test before any kind of gathering like that can really go a long way. You really only want to count on the results of your antigen test for about 24 to maximum 48 hours. So really you want to consider that person negative for that time period. And then if you're gathering again, you got to test again. Also, I would consider using antigen tests if you're having a gathering and someone has recently, for example, flown across the country. That can be a really good way to make sure that they're not bringing COVID-19 into that space. And yes, there are some antigen testing questions in the KPTZ questions as well, so we can wade into those. Any other questions from the commissioners before we do?
Just what do we do when we run out of Greek letters? I saw they skipped a couple of letters. Omicron, I think you said, you know, and I understand skipping new would be a pretty confusing one, and she would probably be a politically tricky one, but how many more are there? Are we almost a Delta?
You know, I'm not sure what they're going to do when we run out of letters. It was originally named new, and then they changed it because that was confusing. So I'm not sure. The naming convention for the variants is complex. But I think one other note, speaking of Omicron, that I think is good to bring up. I know a lot of folks who have been following the COVID-19 pandemic very closely, when they saw that Omicron had arisen, really felt kind of hopeless. I got a lot of calls from friends and family that were like, I wanted to be done. I thought we were almost done. And then this happened, and it makes people worry, like, when are we ever going to be done with this? I think it's important to know that Omicron has not put us back to step zero. We have learned so much about controlling COVID-19, and the measures that we have used before continue to be highly effective. What I really want folks to think about when we think about masking, vaccination, you know, planning our gatherings for safer ways to do them, is there ways to make our community more resilient to this virus? It is going to be with us in some form for a while. And so how do we figure out how to live our lives in meaningful ways and safely? And the way we do that is by using these mechanisms, is by getting vaccinated, getting boosted if you haven't, by wearing a mask if you're going to be in indoor spaces with people whose vaccine status you don't know, and by planning your gatherings, by utilizing testing in smart ways. If you do that, we can have a functioning society. We can live meaningful lives. We can do the things we enjoy. We just have to layer these protections so that we can be resilient to whatever this virus comes up with. So I am not hopeless because of Omicron. I think we actually have all the tools we need to fight this. I would love to see a little more federal intervention on things like testing, and I certainly would love to see more of our community members utilize the tools we already have. But if we do that, I think we're actually going to be just fine. So moving into our KPTZ questions. So the first one was an interesting data question. They were asking the death rate per 100,000 in Jefferson County, and how does that compare to state, national, and international statistics? So the death rate in this context, I believe what they're asking is the number of people in our community who have died of COVID-19 compared to our overall population. And in Jefferson County, that number is actually one of the lowest in the country. So the death rate from COVID-19 in Jefferson County is 62 per 100,000. Interestingly, Clallam County has a similarly low death rate, not quite as low, but also one of the lowest in the country at 96 per 100,000. Compare that to the Washington State death rate, which is 124 per 100,000, or the national death rate, which is 238 per 100,000. Interestingly, if you then look at the numbers as the mortality rate, which is if you contract COVID-19, your likelihood of dying of COVID-19, our mortality rate is the same as what you see in the rest of the country. So we have a mortality rate of 1.5% at present. that shows you that it's not that we are surviving COVID more, it's that we are getting COVID less. It's that all of the interventions that we've put in place, vaccination, proof of vaccination orders, masking orders, everything that we've done as a community has reduced our risk of contracting COVID-19. And that is what has reduced our death rate. If we contract COVID-19, if we didn't do all those other things, our death rate would be as high as everywhere else. Comparing across international borders is a lot more complex, but I can at least get you the numbers for nationally. We have continued to do incredibly well in Jefferson County, and that is in large part due a lot of the leadership of the folks who are on this call who have really supported public health efforts, and really incredible work of the members of our community who have come together to do this. I see so many residents of Jefferson County taking COVID seriously, and that has protected the people in this county. The other thing I would just highlight with those numbers is they are small, and that is because of the work that has been done. If you just take a 1.5% mortality, even that doesn't sound that big until you multiply it by 35,000 people. And then you can see how many people we could have lost to this virus if we hadn't done all of these things. Couple other questions. A lot are about kind of managing your social circle and managing risk, especially as we move into the Omicron variant and however much it will circulate in our community. This person is talking about how her husband will be traveling to Alaska by plane. He will wear an N95 mask when he is indoors. The person who's writing is pregnant and has a 2-year-old and is trying to figure out how to protect the family when he comes back. Both the traveler is fully vaccinated and the woman herself is fully vaccinated, but of course the 2-year-old are not and she's pregnant, so that increases some risk. And so really I think for the general listener, this applies to if you have someone traveling who's coming home to a high-risk space and to places where people aren't vaccinated, what do you do? So a fully vaccinated person who travels, who wears a mask, so wears a good mask, an N95 or KN95 mask on the plane, and who wears it throughout the airport time, who's really cautious with their actions when they're traveling, is relatively low risk for bringing COVID-19 back into the home, but it's not zero. That is one of the places where we see breakthrough infections happen. You're already doing the most important things you can do to reduce that risk is everyone who can get vaccinated is. If you haven't gotten a booster, that's a really good way to reduce risk of contracting COVID-19 and spreading it to others. The questioner didn't quite mention whether or not folks are boosted. So if you're not, definitely get a booster, very important, highly recommended for pregnant people, and also highly recommended for anyone else who's eligible at this point. Wearing a mask in travel is the next biggest thing that you can do to reduce your risk of transmitting COVID to others. And then if you want to take another layer to be safe, if it's possible and acceptable within your family, you can consider sleeping separately when he comes back. So the biggest place of transmission in the household is actually your bed. It's a place where you lay and breathe all night right next to another person. So sleeping in a separate bed when they come back really makes a big difference to reduce any risk of transmission. And then you can consider adding an antigen test. Generally, we see, a negative test at 7 days, you're not going to give COVID to anybody. Now, whether or not that's acceptable or desirable in your family to stay separate that long, you could potentially move that as early as 3 days after return and still get a lot of protection. So an antigen test at 3 to 7 days will provide you a lot of protection and can help you guys get reunited quicker. If you have someone who's traveling who is unvaccinated, if it is acceptable within your family, waiting 7 days and a negative test before you start gathering indoors and unmasked would be safer. But for fully vaccinated folks who are wearing their masks, I think you're doing the biggest thing already. We talked a bit about Omicron variant. That was question number 3. So I think we have largely covered that one, but I know there will be more questions and we will have a lot more data soon. That is the data we have so far. We're continuing to study this. Scientists from around the world are working on this right now. And as soon as we get more data, I will definitely bring it to our next meeting. Similarly, this question asked about friends who travel to Colorado over Thanksgiving and when they come back, how long to wait before they start gathering. So if they are fully vaccinated, you could take an antigen test at 3 to 7 days and you would likely have a good protection before you guys can start gathering again. But your safest is to wait 7 days, get a negative test before you guys start gathering again. The next one is a person who shared that her husband recently died. And I just wanna share for whoever you are, I'm so sorry that you're going through that. And I think this question brings up a really key point, which is how do you flex the COVID-19 safety protocols when you need to? So when you need more people in your circle, because you need more support, how do we be human about this and make this manageable for you? And I'm happy to share, I had an experience towards the end of 2020 where I had to expand my bubble. It happens and it is appropriate. And I want you to seek support, make sure you have your people around you because that's really important. So how do we do that as safely as possible? So this writer already shared that the folks that they gather with are fully vaccinated. So that's great. That's the first biggest thing you can do is to make sure that your circle is as fully vaccinated as possible. If you need to gather with someone who's not fully vaccinated, think about asking them to take an antigen test before you guys meet up indoors. I think that can be a really good way to make sure that you can have a safe gathering. You can get close together, you could hug, you can do everything you need to do. You can really feel confident that if someone tests negative that day with an antigen test, they're not going to give you COVID that day. If you're going to be gathering with higher risk folks, so this person shared that one of their friends is vaccinated but immunosuppressed, it would be very reasonable for you to take a COVID-19 antigen test before you gather with them. But please utilize those supports. It's really important. We need each other. And adding an antigen test to vaccination plans, and certainly adding masking if that's an option for you, can go a long way. And of course, any outdoor gathering is safe. So you can be around anyone you want outside. If you're coming inside and you're going to take masks off, think about adding an antigen test as well. And you should be perfectly safe. One person shared that they have a cousin who's not vaccinated and said that they got a flu shot 20 years ago that nearly killed them because of quote unquote metal binders in the flu shot. And this person thinks that those are also in the COVID-19 vaccine. I can share that there are no metal binders in the COVID-19 vaccine. There are also no preservatives, things like thimerosal that you might have heard about that make folks concerned about some other vaccines. There are no metals, so there's no aluminum, there's nothing like that, no what are called adjuvants in this vaccine. So the COVID-19 vaccines are very, very, very safe. If someone had a severe, potentially anaphylactic reaction to another vaccine, that is not actually a contraindication to the COVID-19 vaccines, unless there is a specific ingredient that is in the COVID-19 vaccines that were also in those. And so I would just encourage folks to really look at the ingredient list online. Everything that's in the COVID-19 vaccines is listed online. You can compare it to your own allergies. There are rare instances where people do have an anaphylactic allergic reaction to an ingredient in the COVID-19 vaccines, and that is the one case where you really can't get these vaccines. But I would encourage folks to really check that ingredient list, make sure it's something that you know you are allergic to. If you have just had an anaphylactic reaction to a prior vaccine that is not a COVID vaccine, you are still recommended to get the COVID vaccine. The COVID-19 vaccine is actually very different from the influenza vaccine. There's not a lot of similarities for the ingredients in those vaccines. What we do recommend, though, is that you get that vaccine in a healthcare facility. So contact your provider. You can go ahead and get vaccinated in a safe place where someone can monitor you, where we can respond if you had any kind of significant reaction, and they'll want you to stay for 30 minutes so they can monitor you and make sure you're safe. But I can tell you that I worked in person at the Clallam County Mass vaccination sites, and we had many folks who had anaphylaxis to other vaccines who did just fine. We watched them for 30 minutes, we took care of them, they did great, and now they're protected against COVID-19. So I'd really encourage you to go ahead and move forward with getting the COVID-19 vaccine. Couple other questions about travel. So one of the questions was how should the Omicron variant change my travel plans? And that really depends a lot on the details of who you are. In this case, this is a person who's fully vaccinated and boosted, who wants to know whether or not it's safe to visit her 89-year-old mother for Christmas. So very fair question. You don't want to travel across country and bring a dangerous variant to a family member who is high risk. The key there is you're fully vaccinated and you're boosted. So you are very unlikely to contract a virus that you can spread to someone else, especially if you also practice other safety protocols on that plane. So you wear a good quality mask, you wear it in the airport, you wash your hands after you go through TSA. And then to add another layer of protection, if you're visiting a high risk family member, I would recommend getting an antigen test before you join them. So as you go in to visit your mom, go ahead and get an antigen test. If you have the ability to put a little space between your flight and when you see your mom, even 24 hours will help us really get a better idea of if you've picked something up. But an antigen test before you go in to see someone should really buy you a good 24 hours of not contagious. You're already boosted, you're already masking. I think that's very safe to do. What I would discourage is traveling transcontinentally or intercontinentally if you are unvaccinated. And that includes specifically children. I think a lot of us are planning holiday travels, and if all the adults in the room are vaccinated, we might think it's safe to fly with kids. I would not recommend flying with unvaccinated kids right now. It's a risky thing to do. We know that planes, trains, buses, those closed indoor environments are really a space where we see a lot of transmission of COVID-19. So I would be very cautious about traveling with unvaccinated family members. If you are going to do that anyway, be sure to get that kid tested before you join high-risk family members. One of the most common ways we travel right now is to visit grandparents. If you're going to be visiting a grandparent, make sure you get that kid tested before you come inside. Rapid antigen tests are available, and it will really help make that a much safer gathering for that family member. Couple other questions. We got a lot of questions today, so sorry for the long list, but a lot of really good questions. So this next person was asking about under what circumstances we should wear a higher quality mask. So something like a KN95 or an N95 mask. And we already touched on one of them. So these public conveyances, if you're going to be in a shared indoor space with 200 other people packed really close together, that's a really good time to wear a higher quality mask. So a KN95 or an N95 is a really good match there. So buses, trains, planes, things where you're traveling in a little steel box with other people, wear a good quality mask. Interestingly, carpooling is the other one. So that's the other place where we actually saw a lot of transmission in the early days of COVID, is if you're carpooling with other people. Now, if you're in a small carpool with other fully vaccinated people, not as high of a risk. But if you're carpooling with unvaccinated people, that would be something to think about. For most people, a KN95 is going to be a lot more tolerable than an N95. A properly fitted N95 that you are wearing tightly is uncomfortable. And so if you are thinking about wearing an N95 for a 12-hour flight, for example, definitely try it out before you go and make sure that you can keep that on your face. Most people will find that it's uncomfortable, and I would rather you wear a KN95 that you keep on than an N95 that you take off because it's uncomfortable. Most folks we use N95s in medical circumstances. As a person who has worn an N95 for 12 hours, I didn't enjoy it, but I did it because it was in a clinical context. Most of the time, truly N95s are going to be in that kind of a space. The other place that you would think about wearing a higher quality mask is indoor mixed unvaccinated vaccinated environments where you're going to be there for a long time. I don't think a KN95 is really necessary for places like the grocery store, where it's just a pretty quick trip. So a surgical mask, a 3-ply cloth mask works really well for that. But if you're, for instance, going to church and your church doesn't check vaccine status, that's a really good place for a KN95 because that can be an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours, depending on your religion. And so I would really think about higher quality masks in those settings. But basically any closed indoor environment with large numbers of mixed vaccinated and unvaccinated people where you're going to be there for hours or more, that's where you really want the higher level of protection. All right. Couple other things. So this last one has a lot of details in it, but it basically comes down to with friends, you will find there are different levels of comfort around COVID-19 safety protocols. Some folks will say, hey, I'm vaccinated, I'm boosted, I'm going to live my life. I'm going to restaurants, I'm going to travel, I'm going to do all the things. Other folks really need to hang back a little bit, who don't feel comfortable doing that yet. There can be a wide variety of reasons for that. Some of that is your personal health history. So if you are high risk of COVID-19, you might be more inclined to take a pause on some of those higher risk activities. And I would just encourage everyone to find the balance that works for you and that helps you live a meaningful life, have the connections that you need, and also feel calm and safe when you go home at the end of the day. If you are going to be gathering, this person was particularly wondering, how do they gather with their friend that participates in higher risk activities than they do? How do they stay safe with the Omicron variant and all the questions around it? And I would say there are some gatherings that are really safe. Kind of no matter what your friend is doing, you can safely gather with them outside. So if you guys want to go for a hike or a walk or a run or whatever works for you, that's totally fine. You can do that really safely. And then if you're going to meet up indoors, you could keep masks on, or you could ask your friend to take an antigen test before an indoor meetup. And if you add all of those things, you can really stay quite safe. And that, I believe, is all of the KPTZ questions.
Great. Thank you. Anyone else have any last questions for Dr. Berry?
Just a quick one, Dr. Berry. Here in Portugal, I'm noticing everyone is wearing surgical masks, not cloth masks, but it sounds like you still feel confident in three-ply cloth masks. Can you talk about the difference and any recommendation you have? I understand N95 or Kina N95 having a very significant degree of protection, but what about comparing cloth with surgical?
Sure. So generally, a surgical mask will provide better protection than a cloth mask, but there's some variability there. So part of it depends on how well that surgical mask fits your face. So if you have a surgical mask that really sits tight against your face, it does provide better protection than a cloth mask. But depending on your face shape, it might or might not. So if you are wearing a surgical mask, that's usually what I lean on. If you see me out in public, I usually have a surgical mask on. They're much more widely available now than they used to be. You want to make sure it fits against your face. If it doesn't, consider knotting the strings to get a tighter fit, and then that can work quite well. But this has actually been studied. So if you have a 3-ply tightly woven cloth mask that fits your face well, it actually filters just as well as a surgical mask. It's all about is it more than one layer? Does it fit your face well? If you have that, you can actually do really well with a cloth mask as well. It's totally up to you. You just want to make sure that you have a good fit and that it's tight enough woven that you can't see light through it. If you hold your mask up to a window and you can see light filtering through that cloth mask, that's not a good enough cloth mask. And then it's kind of along the lines of KN95s too. You want a mask that fits you, will stay on your face, and that you feel comfortable enough in that you can just wear it. You're not going to touch it or move it. It's not going to slip before your nose. Quick pro tip, if your mask frequently slips below your nose, your ear loops are too loose. If you tighten those up, it'll stay on your face.
Thank you.
Good to have an advantage for having a giant head. All right. If there's no more questions, we'll give Willie 3 minutes. how's it going with DEM, Willie?
Good. Thank you, Commissioner. The 3-minute time constraint's making me a little nostalgic, so I appreciate that. Thank you, KPTZ, for all the questions for Dr. Berry. So we had our last 5 to 11-year-old clinic this past Saturday, Blue Heron in Port Townsend. 199 5 to 11-year-olds vaccinated. We just missed that nice even 200 number, unfortunately. The vast majority of those were second doses from kids who had gotten their first dose just 3 weeks ago. But we did squeeze a couple of first dose kids into that clinic. So a thank you to those parents who were able to come out for that one and get their kids two dose series started. We will be back in action, not this Saturday, but the following Saturday. So not the 11th, but we will be at the Chimicum School District Multipurpose Room on the 18th. In the morning from 9 to noon, that's primarily a second dose clinic as well, but there are some spaces available for first doses. So if you're the parent of a 5 to 11 year old, you haven't gotten your kid vaccinated yet, but would like to squeeze in that first dose just a little bit before Christmas, we do have a few spaces available for that. So as always, through the Jefferson County Public Health website, or via our call center, 360-344-9791. Leave us a voicemail. If you call the call center, we're not fully staffed throughout the week there right now. We'll get back to you and help you schedule that appointment for the 18th. Hearing concerns about Omicron, continued difficulties for some folks finding their booster here within the county. We are looking at adding some booster dose opportunities here relatively soon. Not likely for this weekend, but we do have an afternoon available on the 18th after our 5 to 11 year olds are finished. So we're going to be talking about whether or not we can wrangle up enough volunteers to make that clinic happen and offer a few extra booster doses for folks prior to the holidays. So do stay tuned for that. We'll issue a press release. We'll make that known on social media as well as the Jefferson County Public Health website. So we do want to offer up just a little bit more capacity there. Our pharmacies have been doing an absolutely stellar job. I know our local chain pharmacies, they take appointments and their appointments are still a few weeks out. Tri-area pharmacy doing booster doses in the morning from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. Those are walk-ins and they're doing dozens upon dozens of booster doses every day. So I do want to give another shout out to Mark and his team there. If you're searching a booster dose and you do regularly or can travel either to Clallam or Kitsap as part of your shopping, if you head to Costco or the like, CVS, Walgreens, Walmart, all those big chain pharmacies do have booster doses readily available. So if you travel out of the county or can travel out of the county and want your booster dose, I'd really encourage you to look there. That's the quickest and easiest way for you to get it. And there's plenty of capacity. But us not really having a ton of those chain pharmacies, you know, we have Safeway, QFC, we don't have a Walgreens, we don't have a CVS. Things are a little bit tighter for us here. So again, if you can travel, please go get your booster outside the county if at all possible. Otherwise, we still do have those opportunities locally, but they are limited. And then we'll try to offer at least a little bit more here before the end of the year. If you are homebound or have limited mobility, so even getting in the car to get out and get to a big walk-in clinic or getting to a CVS or a Walgreens out of the county, do give us a call at the call center. We are going to be doing a few more visits for homebound folks to help get them their booster. You know, even though they are homebound and obviously not traveling, not being put at in a lot of risky scenarios, with Omicron, we do want to make sure they're protected. So if you're homebound, if you're the caretaker of a homebound individual, you have homebound family, give us a call. We're assembling a list here at the call center to make some home visits and help protect some of the most vulnerable among us there. So that's where we're at right now. Again, if you're confused at all with getting a booster dose, if you're confused at all about testing, please do call us at the call center or head to the public health website. And our call center is not fully consistently staffed right now. So you're unlikely to get an answer, but please do leave us a voicemail and we will call you back within 24 hours. That's just, it's a little bit easier on our volunteers who have continued to do a stellar job. They're tired just like the rest of us. So we're looking to give them a little bit of a break. So we appreciate your understanding. That's where we're at right now. So I had no KPTZ questions, but I will be happy to take some from the commissioners.
You know, a quick follow-up, Willie, if you, I've heard some frustration from parents of 5 to 12 year olds, you know, about the lack of pharmacy options if they can't make it to the mass vaccination clinics. Are the out of county, you know, Walgreens and CVS, do they have vaccinations for children, the 5 to 12 cohort?
Yeah, yeah. So if they're offering Pfizer, the vast majority of them, my understanding is they will be offer those to 5 to 11 year olds.
Yeah, the Squim area pharmacies are vaccinating young kids. So that is a good option. Also, Jefferson Healthcare is vaccinating their own patients. So if you're going in for a well child visit or any other kind of visit and you're eligible for a booster or a COVID-19 shot, you can get vaccinated at that appointment as well. So there are options, and I know it is, it has not been as widely available as we would like. So we are interested in doing some work to improve that availability. The one other group that is eligible for a home delivery of vaccine is folks with developmental disabilities that make them unable to kind of easily access things like pharmacies or mass vaccination sites. I know some folks might not know that they're eligible, but if you have a family member who is living with a developmental disability that makes it hard to be in those kind of large public settings, we can bring a vaccine to you.
Great. And then just, I have one comment. We'll see if the other commissioners have anything else. Just, I got a note as we were talking that Jefferson Healthcare does have, you know, free kits if you are symptomatic, test kits. You're going to go drop them off and they'll contact you if you do test positive only. So just another option out there for testing as we try to stretch that tool a little bit. Any last questions for Willie or Dr. Berry?
Mine were answered. Thank you so much.
All right. Well, thanks for sticking with us. Thanks to the listeners from KPTZ. And we will we'll let you go to jump into our 10:30 hearing. You know, we've caught up a little bit. So thank you both for your
This is KPTZ Port Townsend. We've just heard the weekly public health updates on COVID-19 live from the Jefferson County Board of Commissioners meeting. A recording of today's reports will be available later today for streaming online at kptz.org. Thank you for listening and for supporting your local community radio station. To make a donation to KPTZ, please visit kptz.org.